The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week, we have special guest Al Val talking about Patton Oswalt's Werewolves and Lollipops. Buckle up, Neuromancers, because things are about to get funny on Comedy Album Book Club. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I'm your host, Matt Ardill. This week, I got to sit with the amazing, the hilarious, the absolutely stupendous Al Val. She is a Toronto-based comedian. You may have seen her on CBC Gem, Winnipeg Comedy Festival, Just for Laughs, Halifax Comedy Fest. Basically, if there's a comedy festival in Canada, chances are she has been there. She just finished a tour across the country. They're so freaking awesome. I can't recommend them highly enough. She has a comedy special that I got to go to the taping of, which I super enjoyed. And we chatted about Patton Oswalt's Werewolves and Lollipops. We got into the weeds about crowd work and physical comedy, and I nerded out about nerding out because, you know, just hearing Al talk about comedy is a joy unto itself. So if you're a fan of comedy, if you're a fan of Al, if you're a fan of Patton, this is the episode for you. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of Comedy Album Book Club. Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. Today I am joined by the hilarious Al Val. You may have seen her on CBC, at Just for Laughs, Halifax Comedy Festival, Winnipeg Comedy Festival. Thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me, Matt. I appreciate it. I feel great. I feel chipper.
Awesome.
I feel sophisticated. I brought my most sophisticated palette to dissect some comedy. So bring it
excellent.
On.
Excellent. So you suggested Werewolves and Lollipops, the 2007 album by Patton Oswalt. So what inspired you to choose this album?
So I started doing stand-up in 2006, mm-hmm. and I kind of stumbled upon this album. So I was a year in, and I think how I found this was, I saw it. This was when YouTube was just starting to be popular too. So I saw some YouTube clip of Patton Oswalt doing he was a guest on Letterman or something like that, and he did a bit from that album, and I didn't recognize, obviously I didn't know about the album, and it just, it killed me so hard. I'd never seen anything like it, that I like tracked down the album. I found out it was a bit from this album, and so I picked this album based on, there are two bits in the two tracks in this album that go down as like my all-time favorites as far as like writing, delivery, just powerhouse, just amazing poetry.
What two bits are those that really get you? What were those two bits?
The first one is the very first track. It's KFC. KFC bowls or something like that.
Starting on a dark note.
Yeah. That one. And then just an all-timer for me was, I forget what the track is called, but he talks about a 65-year-old woman giving birth.
Yes.
And how that is a scientific abomination. That is an abomination against humanity. And it's just the way his imagery, he has such a amazing way with words that I'd never seen before, that I'd never heard before. So, you know, 1 year into my stand-up career, when I discovered this, I was just like so enamored with the care and attention that he took in the writing and the polish, not a wasted word, and just so eloquent and articulate, just perfect, perfect, perfect.
And that he's that eloquent and articulate when he is drunk. I mean, it's funny because like I've literally listened to all of his albums. I've seen him perform a bunch of times, and it's neat to see the progression, because like in this album and the one that he had done before this, it's a lot more just like bits. There's not a lot of threading narratively. Like there's some jarring non-transitions on this album where he goes from like, you know, the KFC stuff to I can't remember what the next bit was, but then straight into the most obscene language that you could ever hear. And I mean, it serves a purpose, because then he's going into the bit about how, because he's on King of Queens at that time, and they're like, can you maybe use some more PG language? And then he starts going like goof juice but it's just like that hard shift where it's just like no transition, just like buckle up, because you're gonna get and every bit is funny. Like individually they're all funny, but like later on he's still not a storyteller, but he does seem to have more narrative threads through his specials and albums now than he did in these early ones. But I kind of find it cool in a way, because these early ones, like this one, you get a lot of variety in there. You get a lot of different types of jokes.
Totally. And one of the, he has this, up until I discovered him, I never realized that you could just, like you said, these weird non sequiturs and weird beginnings to all of his bits, like the KFC one, he pretends he's a guy walking up to a counter at KFC. He doesn't introduce the context. He doesn't set the scene for anybody. He just says, oh, I'm starving. What's good here at this KFC? He drops you in the middle of an improv scene that just never happens in stand-up. So it's not groundbreaking, but at the same time, it is so unique, and it's not something you ever really see. So I always thought that was just little tiny details like those that make it so unique.
Yeah. And you mentioned his like eloquence, and like, there's that one point, it's a really powerful bit, because he's slowly building. It's like one of the few long burn jokes that he's got, where he's talking about that girl that he hooked up with and they went to Planned Parenthood and he gets heckled in there. And I'm like, this is the most eloquent takedown of a heckle I have ever heard. He's like going for like these deep sci-fi cuts and just going and going and going. And it's like, wow. Like, just wild.
Yeah. And I can only imagine, I mean, I encourage heckling at my special taping. And I kind of regretted it on night one. Somebody took the challenge a little too seriously. But so I can kind of relate to the frustration of, I can imagine. I feel like he recorded this on one night. He didn't do it over two.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he probably would have. I don't know. Maybe he didn't. But like the enormous fury and rage at some drunk asshole interrupting, not even with anything workable. He just kind of screamed like a chicken.
Yeah, like a grand woo kind of thing.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
In the middle of a moment that Patton was trying to build. So like,
yeah,
the composure, I admire that he was able to not have to pull the show to a dead stop, that they didn't have to edit around it, that he still raged on this guy in such an effective way.
Yeah. And he even has a kind of a funny callback afterwards. He goes, see, that's what I was trying to do, fucking idiot. The thing, and this is one of the things that I find inspiring about Patton, because I mean, we're only a couple of years, a little less than 4 years apart in age, so we're not that different in age, and we have a lot of the same cultural nerd touchstones in our experience. So like the Blade Runner gun and This Mortal Coil, like as a weepy goth boy in the 90s. Yeah. Like that's like right up my alley. So it's like he doesn't have any fear of being too specific in his jokes, because he's able, like I find he's able to successfully surround them with enough universal funny that the individual people that one little kernel is targeted at get that bonus, but there's still something there for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get a lot of the references that he makes. Not a lot, but there are plenty of references that he makes in all of his material throughout his entire discography that like some of it goes over my head, but I can still, there's still plenty of context enough for me to appreciate the message that he's saying. Like it doesn't throw you off the bit entirely. And like, I still have a very fond appreciation for everything. Even the references sometimes are coded in this, delivered in such a way that you get what he's saying, really.
Yeah. You can get the feel of where he's going without necessarily understanding or being the target of the details kind of thing there. One thing I find really incredible about, and this is not just this album, just Patton in general, he's very loose in a lot of ways. Like his delivery is, it just feels organic. I mean, maybe loose is the wrong word, but it's just, it doesn't feel overly scripted. It doesn't feel overly rehearsed. Mm-hmm. It feels very natural. And I mean, I find you're that way as well. Like you have the bike cop bit, which I love. That has this great physical component and this great, like, there's choreography in it, as well as this hilarious, like, wordplay. And it all comes together in this perfect moment of comedy. And how do you keep that natural? Like, how do you keep that just flowing in the moment?
This is the thing with that bit and how I see it relating to the way Patton performs is... Patton is so natural up there and he's so comfortable that he's flexible within his material, but you can tell that there are very strong beats that he really still has to abide by. You know what I mean? Like the 65-year-old woman giving birth, the whole monologue that he delivers describing the dad, describing the act of childbirth to his son. And the thing that ends with like pushing this uncooked Cornish game hen through these gray drapes. It is so important that he hit those words, not stumble, not fill them in with any kind of fat or any kind of pause. So like so to bring it back to the bike cop bit, I remember everything that led up to that last monologue, the choreographed monologue that you've described, for the longest time, I couldn't figure out why it wasn't working. And it was because I was trying to improvise that last part and hopefully and just write it through improv and build it on stage. And finally, there came a day where I got frustrated. It had been so many times in a row that it all just fizzled out over and over again. And so I sat down and I was like, well, I know I want to hit these cues. So let's memorize the script here at this point. And so that bit and kind of the structure of how I write a lot of material now is there are very strong beats that I know I really, really need to hit effectively and efficiently. Don't waste words. Make sure you nail those words in sequence, right?
Yeah.
But then beyond that, once I get the gist of those nuggets, everything else is play. And how I get there, especially setups, I need them to be conversational. So I don't memorize how to set up a joke. I know how to get there. It has to be conversational. Am I making sense? I think I'm making sense.
Yeah, you are. Because I mean, and that's the thing that I feel with Patton, even when he's like going on these like intense tangents, it feels like a dialogue with the audience, not a monologue to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And like you have that energy as well. You engage and yeah, there's crowd work, but you know, it always feels natural and not like, oh, there's this guy with a shirt in the front row that I want to pick on kind of thing. It's more, hey, how you doing? Like, this is my day kind of thing. So it feels like an engagement with the audience, not a confrontation with the audience.
Absolutely. I'm reacting is what I'm doing. I'm reacting internally to the things that I'm saying, because like I improvise a lot, and especially in those setups, who knows what might come out of my mouth. Sometimes it surprises me and I'm allowed to react to that. And then, you know, besides that, I don't subscribe to the whole, like, what's your deal kind of thing. Just going out randomly and being like, you, what do you
do?
Like those introductory questions, there's nothing wrong with them. I'm not coming down on it, but I like reacting a lot more than instigating, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Like I went to see Moshe Kasher years ago at JFL when it was still a thing. I don't know if it's going to be a thing again in future. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, so I went and I sat near the front with my partner, and I had this shirt on, and it was like a bird, and it said nerd underneath it because it was a bird with it was like a pigeon with a pocket protector and glasses. And he just like zeroed in on me like the entire night, and because we're like the only people up front in a relationship. So he's asking me all these questions that were kind of personal. And I was just like, and I was caught in a headlight. And my response when that happens is just to blurt out whatever comes into my head. Whereas my partner was just like, shut up. Just shut up, please. Like she's giving me this look that I like after the panic had left, I'm like, oh, I should have not said anything. Didn't say anything embarrassing, but it's just it, you know, some people are fine with it. Like I'm fine with it, but other people aren't, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a risk.
It's such a disproportionate power dynamic. Asking these probing questions of an audience member, and it's almost like you don't have a right to be like, I'm not answering that. That's too personal, because anything you do in that moment is fodder to the comedian, and they have amplification and they have lighting and they have so many things on their side. It's just, you know, and if you wait too long, they're going to come after you for that. You cannot win as an audience member. It's a very disadvantageous spot that you were put in. And so how brave of you to wear such a bold shirt and sit in the front row.
It's not the first time I've made poor decisions about seating at comedy shows. My very first comedy show I went to was with my mother to a Yucks, and there was a woman doing comedy who decided to like hit on me kind of, but jokingly, not like seriously, because I was an 18-year-old boy. Nobody wants to be with an 18-year-old boy.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
And she like just made a sandwich of all the material I gave her. So, and I don't know, like maybe it's a kink, maybe it's a fetish. I don't know, but I enjoy the experience of getting taken to pieces by comedians when I sit close.
Well, so. I've met like comedy fans. I've met plenty of comedy fans who really do actually enjoy the act of like sitting in the front row and have no problems at all bantering or getting ripped on. It's part of the sport for them. It's part of, mm-hmm. Comedy fans are as a group are a very interesting bunch.
And one of the things too is like, have you seen Patton's most recent special? The one with the barn full of clown pubes.
They're all starting to blend into each other. I think I've seen it.
Yeah.
Is that the one he talked about the Denny's menu with the mascots on the Denny's menu?
I believe so. But the latter half of it, or I'd say the latter 15 minutes of it, is all crowd work. And I think he's too nice to do extensive crowd work because it just kind of fizzles out there.
Oh, I think I remember.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like I feel like in these albums he had like he was angrier back then, which I think there's a fuel. It gives this entire album kind of like a jet fuel at times because he goes to these places. Like the way he screams erect in defiance of God's will. Yeah. I'm just like, wow, wow. But yeah. He's so angry at Dick Cheney and George Bush.
Oh yeah, I remember that video that I saw that turned me on to Patton Oswalt. He did the 65-year-old woman giving birth thing, and when he yelled "erect in defiance of God's will," he got up off the couch and stormed towards the camera and got like right in it and just pointed down the lens. It was so funny. It was so good. I bet it's still up there. You can watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, and, my God.
And I have to wonder if... I mean, the one thing I really appreciate about Patton, and this is not so much in this album, but his previous album, he had a bit that he's gone back and said, I would never do this now because I realize how inadvertently hurtful I was. I have to wonder about the Paris Hilton stuff, if he'd do that now. But the reality, in that moment, in the zeitgeist, it's such a, like, that the toxicity of the birth of reality television. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's like, yeah, I can understand where he was coming from there. But again, it's that rage that fuels his early material that is really... neat kind of thing.
Yeah. there's an optimistic, there's maybe call it naive, but there's a part of me that believes that you can still pull off crowd work and be nice about it. Don't know. You don't have to be mean to do effective crowd work. Maybe he didn't quite nail it to your liking in that special, but I don't know. I might be wrong here, but I think that, I've seen plenty of examples where like you don't need to be
I agree. You don't need to be mean to do crowd work, but I don't think like going to this most recent special, which is kind of a tangent from the album that we're talking about. But I don't think it, I think it's just, you're so dependent on the audience. And he had, when I saw it here in Toronto, he had duds in the Toronto audience. When I saw it on Netflix, he had duds in the LA audience. And it's like, you're only as good as you get there. And they're putting so much faith in the audience to hold up their end of the bargain in that situation. True. It's a risk. And when it pays off, it pays off so good, because it's something unique to that moment, unique to that show, engages the audience in a way that feels personal. So,
yeah.
And you do, a lot of crowd interaction. Like, are there any moments that stand out in your memory of like, oh, this was just a joy?
Of mine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not to overplug my special, but early on in the special, I encourage, half playfully, but I still encourage the audience to, like, if they're feeling saucy, heckle, go for it. I don't give a fuck. I'm feeling naughty. Something like that. I say something like that at the beginning. And night one, a lot of the stuff that this lady kept yelling out was more intrusive and kind of stepped on some jokes. So we had to edit out a few of hers. But on the second night, there were a number of things that kept happening that made it into the final cut that are really, really funny. Like, I was telling a joke about how I came out to my dad at a Buffalo Wild Wing the first time. And I was just about to continue with the joke, and I heard somebody from the audience go, "Same." And I was like, "Are you fucking serious? Same? Like, what are the odds?" And I don't want to spoil it, but I like riffed for like a solid 2 minutes just going off on this. And it was just such a gift that I had to play with. And then at another point, a bunch of stuff happens in this show that I react to. I don't go looking for it, but little exclamations from the audience like tip me off, and I just run with it. So one of the things I love to do is this is the thing. When I perform in comedy clubs, it's for me actually, frankly, a little bit harder to do crowd work, because the atmosphere, the setting isn't as interesting. Like, it's built to draw your focus solely to the stage, no distractions. But this is the thing, is I was never a club comic. I've done my entire career's worth of gigs in like back rooms and bars and in libraries and in the places where you're not supposed to do comedy, but I had to learn to make it work in the most awkward situations. And so I thrive in some bar with like the weirdest art on the walls. And I love picking stuff up and grabbing stuff and physically touching things and handing them to people. And like, there was one show I did at a Firkin pub, and they had these heavy like stools. It was just a stump. It was a giant chunk of a tree that they'd like dropped on the stage, and there were three of them. And I decided to just do a giveaway. I was like, you know what? Because I'm headlining this show, you get to keep a stump, sir. And I just picked it up and handed it to a guy in the front row. And he proudly, for the rest of the set, hugged it like a child on his lap, just beaming up at me the whole time. I forget if he actually like tried to take it home. I'm sure he didn't. But it was just, it's a delight performing and looking back at this guy who's like so charming and so charmed sitting there with this stump that he's hugging the whole time. It's a beautiful thing.
Is that what drives, because you're a very physical comedian, is these alternate spaces or alternative spaces, as they're often called, is that kind of something that helped drive the physicality of your performances?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with my body, and when you watch me perform, I'm very physical. I gesture a lot. I'm very animated, and all of it helps me stay sharp. It helps me think a lot more quickly, because if my body's moving, then my mind is kind of staying in step with that. And physically interacting with things just adds a level of not mystique, just interest. Just like, look at this it becomes almost multimedia. It's like show and tell. Now I'm actually holding this thing, everyone. Take a look at this. It elevates a performance, I find.
Now, one of the things that, you know, that I loved about this album too is we get into some pretty personal cuts into Patton's like outlook and what sort of shaped him. I mean, I love the Star Wars rant because it's basically like, I think when I had a bit, Todd Van Allen's like, have you listened to Werewolves and Lollipops? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, go and listen to that again. And I'm like, oh my God, it was concurrent thinking. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to copy this bit, but there was enough parallels there where I'm like, oh yeah, we really are cut from the same cloth. But the one thing I loved the most, because I grew up in Cambridge, which sort of like how he grew up just outside of DC. I grew up just outside of Toronto. And there's all this, like, as a teenager, when Kids in the Hall were blowing up in Toronto and all of these good bands were playing in Toronto, but I never went to Toronto because I didn't have a license. So he has these like intimate insights into who he is and what he was. And they're so funny. It's so, like, I find it's like, you know, there's resentment there, but he's like grateful in a way at the same time, because it's the shittiness of his hometown and the shittiness of these experiences made him the person he was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that bit lends you a really good insight into who he is as a person. Very nice. Yeah. I don't know how much I can contribute to that, but I agree. Essentially.
Now,
it's true. You're talking about the small town bit, right? Where he was like, and he talks about that, the weather reporter or the news guy.
Yeah. On the news guy.
Yeah.
Now, what's I going to say? Oh, the Cirque du Soleil bit. I've never heard Cirque du Soleil described that way. But as soon as I heard it, I'm like, everything he said there perfectly sums up Cirque du Soleil in my mind.
Yeah. Cirque is so gay coded.
Like a sweaty, horny Frenchman.
Yeah, totally. Like,
Now, I counted the nerd comic book references at one point, and I was like, how is it? We've got Hal Jordan, This Mortal Coil, Comic Book Nerd, Star Trek, Bridge Crew, George Lucas, Darth Vader, Boba Fett, Death Star, Mad Max, Three Men and a Baby, Chewbacca, Trail of Comic Books Going to a Vagina, Jack Kirby X-Men, Blade Runner, Lead Figures for Role-Playing, Pixies, Neuromancer, Karate Kid, and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Which is just like, these are so specific. Like, have you ever been tempted to get like hyper specific with your references or in your material?
Sometimes. I try not to dabble too much. I have like wiped out a lot of really specific references in my act. Cause I don't know. Like, I like doing the occasional thing that winks at a very small subgroup in the audience, but I also don't want to, there's a part of me that just resents leaving anybody out. I just don't like that feeling. And so if I do drop anything like that, it's going to be rare and extremely subtle where like, I'll be moving on from it so quick.
Yeah. And that's the thing, even like, you know, like will it play This Mortal Coil's This Will End in Tears? That in the chicken KFC bit, it's such a brief moment. Like, it doesn't stall the momentum of the wider joke, because everybody gets how much you've given up if you're eating a KFC bucket.
Like, that's one of the references that I don't know. I have no idea what This Mortal Coil's This Will End in Tears, you said?
Yeah, that's the album. It's This Will End in Tears.
Every time I heard that album, I couldn't even make out what he was saying. This Will End in Tears. I just heard kind of tears at the end. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the title is context enough. It sounds like a very depressing song. So
yeah,
even if you don't know, even if you don't get the full scope of the reference, it's still strong enough that it's effective, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it just sounds silly enough too. Like, it's specific and silly. So the people who get it are like, yeah. But if you don't, you say, yeah, it doesn't stall anything. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, and the image of comic books leading to a vagina is just hilarious to me.
Would that work on you, Matt?
Probably. Yeah. is there any thoughts, anything that you want to share about this album before you wrap things up?
I sometimes think about, it's interesting, especially as you get older and more experienced in stand up and you start carving out your own sort of path and you find your own voice and things start sort of humming along and you're very comfortable in your own delivery, in your own voice. I think it's so funny. A lot of the comics that I admire the most and love the most are comics who do things that I couldn't possibly, mm-hmm. that are so far away from my delivery and my path and my voice that there's such a deep admiration for it. And I feel like Patton is genius on a level that I could never hope to even come close to. So there's this real reverence for his thought process and just like how thorough he is with an idea. And so, I'm just in awe of what he's capable of.
Well, if anybody wanted to find out where you're playing, check out your social media, where can they look for you?
Yes, find me on TikTok, Twitter. Don't find me on Twitter. The only people who follow me on Twitter are pervs anyways. I swear. It's like
that's all that's left in Twitter, like hate crimes and like pervos, you know?
It
that's
really it. Is. But somehow I'm gaining the fastest following on Twitter than all the other ones. I post one picture of myself and I get 20 follows from all these different sissy porn accounts. follow me on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, all Alval Comedy, ALVAL Comedy. I have a podcast of my own. It's me just going solo, ranting. It's super fun. It's called Podgis, PODGIS. You can find that anywhere and on YouTube. And I have a special coming out, So Brave. It's called So Brave. We still don't have the date for it. My God. But when it finally comes out, when this thing finally sees the light of the day, the bandwidth of the internet, people will love it.
And as somebody who is in the audience of one of those shows, I wholeheartedly agree. The world is going to be a brighter place when that special comes out because it is flipping hilarious. And I can't wait.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Check it out. So Brave, Alval.
Awesome. All right. Thanks very much. And thanks for listening to Comedy Album Book Club.
Been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here Comedy and ShowbizMonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Beauchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.